Welcome to Yoga Life Lessons.
With myself, Debbie.
Me, Chris.
And also sometimes me, Lowell.
In this episode, we talk about lessons from Carly.
We're ready to go. It feels like there's significantly more pressure on the quality of this podcast now that we're not just leaning over my iPhone microphone in the dining room.
Or at bedtime.
Yeah.
that wouldn't make for good viewing.
That was the one where you just howled.
Yes, let's not do that one again.
No. Do you want to do it how you asked questions and then we went from there? Because I think
maybe we talk about what we have been doing this week. So you have been working with Carly.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean Carly Simon here. Sorry.
So, yeah. So all through this week, we've been working with a variety of different subtle body practices, from visualization and yantra practices to mantra sadhana. And particularly, we've been working with the iconography of Carly. And the paradox of understanding her as a vehicle for both transformation and simultaneously radical self-acceptance. And the quality of truthfulness and of ahimsa, of non-violence, that are necessary to underpin all of that ferocious efficacy.
Okay, so let's just stop there, because let's just go into her ahimsa, because I think that there are lots of different ways that people use this. But so let's just put a magnifying glass over that for a moment, because when you talk about, the self, it's actually a really difficult journey and process, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think when people reference ahimsa, usually they're referring to the first of the yamas as are coded in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And I always remember, I can't remember who it was, but there was a translation that I was reading. And it said that often it's taught that Patanjali taught the 8 limbs of yoga, whereas many other systems have 6 limbs. Mm. And there was a point whereby this particular commentator suggested that rather than it being an 8-limb system, the yamas and the niyamas were intended entirely as prerequisites to even starting on the path, or the practice of the path of a practice. And so I think it's really interesting that it's sort of a retrospective consideration for us. People kind of dive in and then it's like, okay, here are all the things that it's about. And it can often be brought back in almost like a sort of set of ethical requirements in order for it to be sort of a proper practice. And then rather than a cue towards a contemplation, it becomes a sort of mandatory code of conduct.
Yeah.
And in doing so, it just becomes arbitrary.
Yeah.
You know, people will make gestures at speaking in a certain way or avoiding certain things. But the complete acceptance necessary in order to truly approach the world non-violently or non-harmingly, it is really a personal journey as opposed to an attainment.
Mm-hmm. And not an outward expression as well. It's an inward expression, correct?
Yeah, well, I think I like the word involution. Mm. This idea that you have to go like all the way in and through in order to effectively go out again.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to exist it in order for it to apply beyond you.
Mm.
Because otherwise it's conditioned.
Mm.
It's non-violence with like a value judgment attached to it. You know, this person is worthy of non-violence, this animal product deserves non-violence, but this category of this doesn't, and this part of me doesn't, and you know, whatever else it might be, that branch of yoga that says different things to what we believe, it isn't worthy of it.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think for ahimsa to be valuable, it has to be entirely free of the conditions. Mm-hmm. And the conditions externally mirror the beliefs we hold about the parts of ourselves that are tolerable and or intolerable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. So
we aren't looking for sponsors necessarily for the podcast, but
I was just about to say when you were getting your tone tied a little bit, do you need a little sip of my sin gluten ambar? Yeah.
Other brands are available. Do you have to say that still?
I've no idea.
Just pay.
Yes, you do. Okay.
Probably. We do, yeah. Other brands are available.
This is not product placement.
No.
So, how is your practice with Ahimsa?
Oh, well, I think for me, and the story that we told within the training that summarizes it is the segment of the David Mahatmya wherein Kali springs forth from the furrowed brow of Durga in order to fight the demon Raktabija. And so Raktabija is this powerful asura who gained the boon basically by pleasing the gods that he could clone himself with every drop of bloodshed. So it didn't matter how furiously the demons were attacking. You know, they'd slain one and then the next one had sprung up. They'd slain one, the next one had sprung up. And so Kali leaps out, tongue lolling. And what she does is she licks up all the drops of blood before they can touch the floor and spring into clones. And one way of interpreting this then is that and Tantra uses the term digestion, which I really love. That this notion that you have to fully digest everything. Mm. You have to let it in. You have to chew it. You've got to swallow it. Mm. And then just like any process of digestion, you know, there's assimilation, there's some good stuff, there's some excretion, there's some waste products. Mm. That balance varies, of course, from like meal to meal. Mm-hmm. But in terms of living it, then it becomes about, well, how do you allow that principle to apply to everything? How do you be in the moment, let the moment move entirely through you, and then without it sticking, you know, like, does it get stuck in your throat? Mm. Does it sit there as indigestion? Is it just kind of bubbling away for a while? Or do you retain it? Do you just hold on to it?
That's kind of when people are holding on to angst or grudges, perhaps, as a word.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And so then, and then there's a sort of a consideration then of how the releasing stage of that occurs in a graceful and productive way.
Okay, so how does that occur?
That's a really hard question.
I like a hard question.
How does it occur? Well, I think it really depends on... I couldn't be further back in this chair.
I mean, it's a warm day today.
No, I'm going to lean into this question.
Yeah, lean in.
How does it occur? I think that... We begin to dance then between the two principles of truthfulness and non-harming, which entails understanding that your vantage point is unique, is restrained in many ways by your conditioning, and whilst it may feel undeniably true to you in that moment, it has no ultimacy and it has no ultimate sort of priority over different vantage points. So the capacity to be both aware of what those things are whilst aware of what your sort of contribution, if you like, to the discussion of something ultimately arbitrary is, is how you get that balance then of grace without sort of shying away from, because the sort of the flip side is just the withdrawal and the bypassing. And this is also what we see in the same story. We see the demons Chanda and Munda, and one of them who is this sort of introverted, withdrawn character. And they're not like, you know, not sort of like peacefully step back observing, but they're like kind of scorned and pushed out. And they're like, well, I don't need to be in this circle. Yeah. It's not a sense of freedom from to be in and to be out. It's like, well, you know, I'll be over here if you don't want me over there. And so I don't know if that answered the question.
I was just like, where is this going?
Or not.
What are you talking about? Which is why I say it often. But I guess then, so then how do you guide people to then navigate their own process? Because, you know, we are quite open with how we like to proceed with the practice of yoga, is that we have it as a lifestyle. Like, it's yoga intertwines into your life. It's not necessarily only just something that you come and sit on your mat and practice. You can use it in your job. You can use it in your relationships. You can use it in your self-management. You can use it in your mindfulness. You can use it when you're shopping, when you're stood in a queue, you know, when you're dancing on the dance floor.
Yeah.
Well,
I do think that there is a non-arbitrary parallel between the mat-based practice, the postural practice, and the sort of the broader conditioning of the body.
Mm.
So I think that where we start with most people is there. It's meeting them on the mat, where they've come to probably with not a real understanding of how it will be achieved, come to get to know themselves better, come to work on their physicality and their mental health and maybe their spirituality. And I think that what we do first then is we begin to just implicitly weave the principles into an understanding of how to effectively engage the practice. Because people, you know, you can't tell people that they have to let go of an outcome expectation and all these things straight away, because it's too much of a leap from where they were before. So instead, you have to rephrase what an outcome is, such that the thing that they begin to push for is actually not like a distant outcome, but a possibility of engaging the posture differently there and then.
So just being in that moment. So almost being in that moment. And when you're out of that moment, you're then out of that moment.
Yeah, well, so first it's like, are you actually paying attention to what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
And then having cultivated the capacity to pay attention to what you're doing, once the posture is established enough that the mind can creep back in, it's like, okay, so I think Adyashanti always says, like, don't worry about getting enlightened. Think, like, learn all the ways that you pull yourself out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so probably everyone has relatively tranquil first few minutes when they sit down and it's like, this is this. And then it's like, okay, well, what creeps back in?
Yeah.
And how then do you begin to respond to that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The more contained the practice is, then the more space you have to begin to drop into all the stuff that starts to wriggle out of the cracks of the body.
Yeah.
And it's true to say that all of this is occurring because we operate from a nervous system, and that the wiring is there for many, many different jobs. So when we push and pull against our body, it creates a pattern of response to challenge that is present then in our coding for everything.
Mm-hmm.
We think in the same way, we do in the same way. If we can begin to kind of get into that body layer, then gradually it starts to begin to seep through, and we start to think about energy slightly differently, and we start to think about goals slightly differently. And slowly those things begin to filter through. And then at that point, there's just an organic, broader contemplation because it begins to become obvious what's causing the problems. Mm. So to start off with, you feel frantic, stressed, whatever. You go to yoga, you feel good for a bit, and then it's almost like you've recharged your battery, and then you unplug the wire again, back out into the world. I'm out of battery, I need to go back in and plug in.
Yeah, so that's the thing. It's then intertwining that into, so when you leave your mat, you still can sustain that energy that was built up, that expansion of perhaps the energy body and the mindfulness.
Yeah, because it's more like, it's not really like recharging your battery. It's more like just installing a better
program.
Yeah. Which is probably a bad analogy, because every time you update your iPhone, the battery life gets worse. But it'd be like installing more efficient software. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you catch yourself on the mat. You're like, oh, you know what? Actually, I'm thinking about this, blah, blah, blah. But then you'll be at work and you're like, you'll catch yourself and you'll be like, well, you know what? Actually, I can respond to this person differently. Mm-hmm. And then you respond to it differently and their response is different.
Mm-hmm. So the reaction the response.
Yeah, everything requires the two inputs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you can't diffuse a situation by telling someone that their situation needs to be diffused. Mm-hmm. You have to approach it with an energy of diffusion.
And that's all great and good and well. But sometimes there are occasions that actually that does need to be that energy. So then how is that navigated? Because there are some things that, you know, yes, you say, oh, we want to respond as opposed to react. Uh-huh. However, there are some things that don't actually receive the relative response when you respond. And so perhaps sometimes there needs to be a different path to that. So then, you know, so there needs to be reality of how this really does work, because it's all good and well saying, yeah, let's be mindful, let's just respond like this, but sometimes it just needs this and this. So then how is that translated?
Well, what I'm not saying let's just respond softly.
Yeah,
what I'm saying is let's clear out the stuff that's clogging up the background so that what you respond to is the thing and not all your past experiences, all your assumptions, all your imaginations. Mm-hmm. What one of my teachers always says, you're never responding inappropriately. There's no such thing as an inappropriate response, only a badly timed one.
Yeah.
You know, like you're responding appropriately to something, but maybe not the moment that's actually in front of you.
Mm. And can I ask a question? What about the non-response?
I think that sometimes it's the most valid response and sometimes it's an easy out.
Yes.
And so you just have to know in this moment, is this really what I believe is right and true and necessary? Mm-hmm. Great, do it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't rationalize someone who is irrational in that moment. You know, if nothing else, once people are in a certain nervous system state, it just becomes physiologically impossible. You get stressed, parts of your brain literally shut down. Mm-hmm. You don't have access to those things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so
then I guess I can refer to something that you said at the very beginning of this training about you can be a mat teacher, you can be an asana teacher, or a yoga teacher.
Yeah, you can teach yoga through posture, or you can teach postures on a mat. Mm-hmm.
And they're two different teachers, yeah?
They're two, I would say that they are along a continuum, wherein one is just choosing to go a bit further down the line, which... I think so. In the Recognition Sutras, there is this wonderful passage whereby the author says, you know, sort of detailing why their philosophy is what it is. Mm. It doesn't say anyone's wrong, but what it says is, well, this is this cult, group, sect, whatever. They believe in this, they're looking for this, and they find it here. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys believe this, they're looking for this, and they find it here. Mm-hmm. We see that and we know it's there. We see that and we know it's there. But also, you know, we know that there's something else here. Mm-hmm. And so this is where we're going to go. Mm-hmm. And if you want to stop here, great. Mm-hmm. Go there, do it well. You're still getting, as far as this tradition's concerned, you're still getting closer mm-hmm. to getting free from samsara. Mm-hmm. Maybe just not all in one go. Mm. Yeah. So, yes.
Oh, this is heavy, isn't it? It's been, I think, a nicely balanced week because we've had some really hardcore serious lectures. And then we intertwined midway some acro, which was an interesting one. I lost the plot with it. I had one of my laughing fits and then Chris couldn't demo with me anymore because my abs were unable to sustain.
Hovering in the air on my feet.
So it was quite nice that we had that kind of break of that introspection, because sometimes you can go a little bit too far in and then you kind of sometimes get lost in this world of depth of questions. And I know that sometimes people think, oh my gosh, should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? But it's all about the balance, isn't it? Yeah. It's all about exactly. That balance about, you know, evening out what it is and how it is you live your life.
Exactly. And if you start to take it all too piously, then that just becomes another condition.
Yeah.
And we're right back to where we started, whereby you're imposing a boundary beyond which you're somehow wrong and or bad and or missing the point.
Yeah.
And you're straight into thoughts that are a disservice or a violence to yourself because they are no different to cutting off a limb.
That's a bit extreme. How do we get there?
Well, a limb or a limb, because a himsa is a limb. But it is true. It's like, well, everything I do with my left hand is good. Everything I do with my right hand is bad. And it's no different to be like, well, this I've put this barrier here. I've closed off a portion of me in order to deem myself acceptable and or qualified for this practice in some way, and the practice has none of that. It says everyone will benefit from it. Everyone can find it. Everyone is entitled to, deserving of, and already infused with it.
Lovely.
Which feels like a nice place to end.
Yeah, okay then, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Lovely chatting with you.
It was lovely chatting with you too. Perfect. And thank you to Afnan behind the screen, much to his delight, I'm sure,
Thanks,
a change, who has provided this wonderful setup.
Cheers.
And is going to be keeping us to account on this podcast and to our unofficial sponsors, Ambar.
Because we're utterly useless at it, to be quite honest.
We are.
We chat like this. If we could just have a microphone with us all of the time when we have our random chats, it might be a little bit different. But sitting down, we're just like, oh, we'll do it tomorrow. And
manana,
tomorrow never comes.
Manana, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Although, we're closing it now.
Bye-bye for now.
Thank you.